Hi everyone, my name is Gabriel Ha, I'm PM on the Visual C++ team, and I am here with my fellow PM on the Visual C++ team. This is Carl, who works in, well, Carl, why don't you tell the viewers a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Carl, as he just said. I work on the Visual C++ front-end team. I've worked at Microsoft for 2 years now, and at the front-end team for 1.5 years. I'm basically in charge of scheduling and planning for the language features that we'll be releasing in this compiler, and other miscellaneous stuff, while our devs do most of the hard work and all of the heavy lifting.
Very much so. So here you guys have some new features in the Visual Studio 14 CTP1. Why don't you give us a little preview about what we're going to see today.
In the CTP we released, in addition to all of the language features that were included in the November 2013 CTP for Visual Studio 2013, we have generalized lambda capture, user-defined literals, inline namespaces, the noExcept operator, thread-safe statics, and unrestricted unions.
So I hear you have a demo for us.
Yes. We have a demo for all of these features.
All right.
And we can get started.
Let's get right to it.
All right. Let's start by demonstrating thread-safe statics, or as some people call it, thread-safe magic statics. This feature guarantees that each function local static variable is initialized once and only once. That is, each invocation of the function will use the same static variable, and the static variable will not be initialized multiple times by each function. So to demonstrate this, we've created this very simple class that stores a single integer, and it has a constructor that sets the integer with its parameter. And we will use this to store the number of the thread that initialized the variable. We also have this function that we're going to be passing into the thread to call, and this function initializes a static local variable of type x with a thread ID that is passed into the function, and it prints a simple message. And here we have the main function, also very simple. It initializes two threads and then joins them and passes the same function to both, but a different number to each so that we can see which of the functions initialize the variable. Let's run this in Visual Studio 2013 RTM and see what happens. Now, of course, to demonstrate this race condition, we have to actually run the program multiple times. So we have a script here. All it does is run the program 100 times and print the output. Let's first compile this, then run the script. You see that sometimes the output is inconsistent with other runs. For example, in run 81, you see that X was constructed by thread 1, but it was again constructed by thread 2. This is not supposed to happen. A thread local static variable is only supposed to be constructed once and only once. And now we'll demonstrate what happens when you compile the program with the new Visual Studio 14 CDP compiler. This is the same program. Let's build it. Okay, it's already built. And we will run the same script as on the other computer. Here you see that in no run is the same object initialized twice. Next, we'll be demonstrating inline namespaces. This feature allows namespaces to be declared inline, such as the case here, so that the contents of the inner namespace can be accessed from the outer namespace without an extra level of indirection. Now, why would you want to use this feature? Well, the reason is that namespaces are often used to enclose contents of older versus newer versions of the same library. For example, here we have an old version of foo. And in foo2, we have a newer version of foo. But the user of the library doesn't want to have to navigate the organizational innards of the namespace. So he just wants to use everything from the namespace foo directly. to achieve this, you ask, why don't we just write using namespace foo2 inside the outer namespace? Well, the reason is that if a user wants to specialize on a class inside a namespace, he must have the same namespace as the class. But if you were to using namespace inside the foo namespace, this would not work. C++ does not allow this to happen without the foo namespace matching the actual enclosing namespace of the class foo. Now, we demonstrate this feature simply by, well, we have a class foo. It has an old functionality, and we have a second version of foo in which we've introduced new functionality in addition to extra functionality. And we have a specialized version of foo, which specializes on a custom class called bar, simple, empty, that has specialized functionality and specialized extra functionality. In main, we declare foo, and this is a default foo. Note that it uses the foo namespace directly. And this should print new f and g, because foo2 was declared inline, so its contents, this foo, is accessed directly from this namespace if you do not use an extra level indirection as here. Here we explicitly say we want to use foo2, and this is also specialized on bar, our custom class, which we specialize here in the foo namespace. So this should print specialized f and specialized g. Lastly, we showed that when we specialized the foo class on bar, we only specialized the new foo because that was the one that was declared inline. When you explicitly access foo bar from foo1, this should just print old f. Now we will run this program, and we see that the program behaves as expected.
So the idea is that the contents that were inside foo1 didn't have the namespace there before, so that was like the old functionality. But then to make a new version, you make that part into a namespace.
Yes.
But then for the newer functionality,
you also make it into a namespace and inline that one. Right, so that's the one being used.
Very cool.
Right. Now we will be demonstrating the noExcept feature. This feature actually has two parts. First is the noExcept specifier, which was released back in November 2013 with the out-of-band CTP. This allows you to specify functions as noExcept. That is, these functions are not allowed to throw an exception. In this CTP for Visual Studio 14, however, we've introduced the noExcept operator. This operator returns true or false based on the expression you pass into it and whether or not it may or may not throw an exception. For example, noThrow we've specified as noExcept. So if you put noThrow into a noExcept operator, this will return true, whereas this will return false because mayThrow is a simple function that was not specified with noExcept, so it may throw an exception. We also have a conditional throwing function here. It is specified as noExcept based on whether or not t is equal to 0. That is, if t is equal to 0, then this function will not throw an exception. Otherwise, it will. This is also new in the Visual Studio 14 CTP. We demonstrate that this function also works in the noExcept operator. For example, here we pass 0 to conditional throw, which means it will not throw an exception, so this should evaluate to true. And here we pass 1, which means that this will evaluate to false. Now let's run the program. And we see that everything works as expected. And this completes the no accept feature as specified in the C++ standard. We will now be demonstrating the unrestricted unions feature. Unrestricted unions simply means that certain restrictions for unions were lifted in the new version of C++. Prior to C++11, unions could not contain members of classes that have non-trivial constructors. For example, here we have a struct point and it defines two constructors. This means that it has non-trivial constructors. Basically, any time you define a constructor for a class, that class has a non-trivial constructor. So in C++03, this would not be legal since you cannot include such an object in a union. But it is legal in C++11. However, if you need to do this in C++11, the standard mandates that you also create a constructor for the union that explicitly constructs the member, as we do here. If you do not do this, for example, the compiler will complain. Let's see what happens when we do this. See, the compiler complains that you are attempting to reference a deleted function, referring to the fact that the constructor for the union was deleted implicitly because you've included a member with a non-trivial constructor. So if we are to give this union an explicit constructor, compilation will succeed. Now we will be demonstrating user-defined literals. This feature allows programmers to append numeric and string literals with meaningful suffixes to give them suitable semantics. The compiler transforms these suffixes into calls to appropriate functions that were defined for the user-defined literal. For example, here we've defined the literal 人民币 for the Chinese currency. The special syntax involves empty double quotes and the operator keyword. The parameter to this function is simply divided by 6 to return the dollar value. I've put 6.0 here for now, but obviously this is not the current exchange rate. So we verify that this works by passing in 10.0 renminbi to this user-defined literal, and we print out how many dollars it would equal. Let's run this and see what happens. And we see that it called the user-defined literal function and divided the number by 6. Lastly, we'll be demonstrating the generalized lambda capture feature. This feature allows the results of evaluating an expression to be assigned to a variable in the capture clause of a lambda. For example, here we assign 3 to I directly in this lambda. Note that no enclosing variable called I is required to do this. The real reason for implementing this feature is that it allows move-only types to be captured by lambdas. For example, here, pointer was declared as a move-only type, a unique pointer. This can be moved into a lambda by writing p equals standard move by calling the standard move function, and we print out its address and its value inside. Without the generalized lambda capture feature, this would not be possible. Let's run this and see what happens. Simply, the program behaves as expected. We've printed out I, which is 3, and we've printed out the address and the value of the unique pointer that was moved into the lambda function. This being a Visual Studio 14 CTP, we've not yet implemented IntelliSense for some of our features. And for generalized lambda capture, you may still see erroneous squiggles. In future releases, these will be removed.
Well, Carl, thanks so much for your time. This is great. It's a lot of demos, but we got through them, and it was really good. Looking forward to see what the front-end team has for future CTPs.
Thank you.